Patas.
Welcome to Fart House, where we watch the artsiest, fartsiest film so that you can pretend that you did. I am one of your hosts, Casey O'Brien. Ooh, what? Casey O'Brien? Mm. Casey O'Brien-ing. Casey O'Brien. And we're joined by my co-host, who is simply frothing at the mouth right now. We had a little bit of technical difficulties prior to the record, and I was worried that we were going to lose Patrick to madness.
I was melting down. I'm still like trying to get myself into show mode because I'm just so angry right now.
It's crazy. Even want to have his camera on in the Zoom because he said he was red as
a tomato. No, that's not true. It's because the internet isn't working. This god fucking damn it supposedly fantastic Google Fiber that we have here in Austin is supposed to be the best, and it's just awful. It's just garbage.
As predicted, Austin, a third-rate city with bad internet.
And it's infuriating, too, because I really, really want to see my brother and sister-in-law because I haven't seen them in forever. I'm supposed to go see them. And this fucking Google. I blame Google. I will sue Jeff them for Bezos? Damages. Yeah, Jeff Bezos is responsible in some way as well. Zoom, all these fucking evil tech nerds are all responsible for this.
Isn't Austin a bit of a tech hub?
Yeah, it is.
You'd think the internet would be better. Help a brother out.
Oh my god. It's the most pure uncut rage I've felt in a long, it's coursing through my veins. Like I'm feeling so much anger.
Do you think that it could be one of our nemeses or like one of our rival movie podcasts that's trying to cut our internet to ruin the show?
I wouldn't put it past another pod for trying to throttle speeds.
Who's trying to throttle you?
I don't know.
Clay Keller? Clay's like the complete opposite of our nemesis. A friend, I guess
you could say. He's a friend and ally. A mentor.
Anyway, sorry for bringing that energy.
You, as always, were patient and kind and considerate.
Oh my god.
As I melted down.
How are you though? Outside of the rage, how are you?
Outside of the rage, I'm okay. Had a nice weekend. My dad came down from San Diego. Nice. We did a few projects around the
Fage.
Yeah, so extremely thankful for his help and assistance and getting some things squared away in my new place, and I made some new friends, Case.
You're making all sorts of friends all over the place.
I made friends at a show, a music show, and went to another music show with them. So we'll see how that goes.
Wow, I'm impressed, Patrick. Have you told them about Fart House? That's the next step in friendship.
Yeah, I did tell them about Fart House, yeah.
Oh!
But one of them hasn't seen any movies, has seen nothing. So I told her that she would be a perfect audience member for this show.
You don't have to listen. At all. You don't have to. I mean, they do have to listen. They don't have to watch the movies. Mm-hmm. That's the point. We do it for them. They don't have to.
Exactly. I was trying to emphasize that. So hopefully that friendship with a listener. Yeah.
If they don't listen to the podcast, you cut them out.
Right. Yes. You cut them out. Like the cancer they are.
Yes, exactly.
How are you doing, Case?
I'm great. I'm feeling particularly good today. I don't know
why. I'm jealous.
Why.
Yeah, I want that feeling.
I got a really full night's sleep last night.
I had awful sleep.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. I've been taking melatonin right before I go to sleep, and that's really helped knock me out. Or not knock me out, but it keeps me asleep, which is usually my problem. I'll wake up at 3 a.m.
That's my problem.
And I can't get back to sleep.
I have all sleep problems that you could. And I was having night sweats last week, too, which was awful. Do you ever get night sweats?
No.
I think anxiety can cause them, and I've just generally been just an absolute wreck.
Speaking of night sweats, so I like to have nice pajamas, and I haven't had nice pajamas in a long time, and it's been a problem in Los Angeles because most pajamas are like flannel long sleeve, and I live in a damn desert. It's hot, so I bought short sleeve and short pajamas. But I only bought the shirt, and the shirt came today, so I have to buy the other half.
Okay.
Anyways, that's my little journey. My little pajama journey.
What's the material?
Cotton. Breathes. Okay. So I don't get the night sweat. It's a preventative measure.
Okay. Have you heard of this mattress pad that's extremely expensive, and you can put it underneath your sheets, and it you fill it up with water, and it's like regulates the temperature of the. I'm curious about that, but it's a very expensive product. But I feel like that would be perfect for me.
Oh,
and I might need to invest in it because my sleep is just awful.
Do you ever sleep nude?
Everything's awful.
People always sleep naked in movies and stuff, and I find that odd. I don't know anyone who sleeps nude.
Who's sleeping naked in movies?
Don't you feel like that happens? It's like, I always sleep nude. Or, here's an example, Blake in The Bachelorette, he said he slept nude. And I was like, you freak?
I thought he was in boxers.
No, I think he was naked.
No, I sleep in just boxers.
Good.
For all of our listeners out there.
Very good.
Will you ever do just boxers, or do you always have a t-shirt on?
Yeah, I'll do boxers.
It's just boxers.
So yeah, just boxers.
Okay. Are you scared of your wife seeing your chest, your bare chest?
Yeah. I wear a full gown with a little sleeping cap.
Are you a never nude?
Like Scrooge. I'm a never nude. Patrick, we got to move on here. Mm-hmm. We must. Do we have a sponsor today?
No, but...
That's fine, because we're moving on the Patreon. We actually are working on it.
Shit is actually getting done. In fact, I think people will probably be able to begin subscribing next week, probably.
Fantastic. I'm excited to announce... Patrick and I had our first meeting yesterday with each other. Kind of, though, right?
Yeah, I'd say it was probably our first meeting having to do with a pod that wasn't the same day that the pod was recorded.
I think it was the first meeting since... us meeting to talk about making this show.
Probably.
But yeah, so that's coming. Don't mm-hmm. worry.
Yeah, that's actually going to come. It's going to be exciting. There's going to be all sorts of treats and delights.
Oh, so many treats and delights. It's not one of Patrick's usual lies. We are working on this. Patrick,
yeah.
Let's move on here to the Letterboxd rundown.
Okay.
How was your week? It seems like you had a busy week.
Another D-plus week.
Which usually that translates to one movie, is that
right,
correct?
Right, exactly. That's the that's.
Oh, should we figure this out?
What?
So like D-plus is one movie, C-plus is two movies, B-plus is three movies, A-plus is four movies.
Maybe,
what do you think about that?
Why is it all pluses? What about the other, like...
Because we're super
C,
guys.
C minus. And that
that's
kind
too
of
complicated.
All right. Well, let's talk about that.
God. Okay. At our next meeting.
At
in
our
a
next
year,
meeting
we'll talk about that.
Next year.
Okay. So D plus. What did you? How was your week?
Manuel, a patron of the farts, friend of the pod,
yes.
Our resident linguist and music expert.
Yes.
Him and I had dinner on Sunday at the Whip Inn.
This makes me happy. I'd love to hear that.
And then. Got a bottle of wine, came back to my place, and watched The Quiet Place Part 2.
Had you seen A Quiet Place Part 1?
Yes. And,
which is better?
The first one, I think. And I think Manuel would agree. But the second one's pretty good. It was fun.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was you definitely have to, it doesn't stand on its own. You have to have seen the first one.
I was on a plane, and I saw my neighbor watching it, and I thought, that looks kind of interesting. I'm intrigued. My interest is piqued.
Yeah, it's worth it.
My
so
turn.
It was me. Yeah, your turn. Wait, hold on. Let me go through really quickly. I know you say this doesn't count, but I do want to mention that I did watch White Lotus. I finished White Lotus. Did I tell you this?
Oh, you did.
Uh-huh.
I love the theme song.
Me too. And I saw someone on Twitter had said that they thought the music was kind of, it distracted from the big emotional moments of the show.
No,
thought it contributed to the general sense of anxiety and... dread. I thought it really worked personally.
I love that music.
Yeah, I thought the music was great, and I loved its omnipresence.
Yeah, I loved it. Did you like the series overall?
I did like it. Slightly underwhelming. It was really entertaining, but I think it kind of just like lost steam by the end, and I was these kinds of shows. I mean,
think you and Luce would agree.
Yeah.
Luce was a little cooler on it. She liked it, but was cooler on it.
I think these kinds of shows, they kind of set themselves up for failure because they kind of, you just always expect this, the most spectacular finale with all sorts of twists and turns that you can never see coming. And then when everything kind of falls into place, you're like, okay.
Yeah. I hear you.
Kind of like Mayor of Easttown.
Didn't watch that. I'm getting a little tired of prestige television.
You were never on board with prestige television.
I was never on board.
You resisted Sopranos for centuries.
Well, that wasn't due to not wanting to watch it. I just didn't. I guess I did. I can't say I can't. Yeah, I did resist. I still have never seen Breaking Bad. Which
although
is
you famously
good.
Did have a Mad Men party in 2011.
Well, I was on the Mad Men train.
Mm-hmm.
That was a fun party.
That was a great party.
Do you remember that party?
You were drunk
as hell.
That was the first time I ever threw up from drinking, was that party.
You were dragged out of the party.
Yeah. I had chocolate cake was the last thing.
I remember Sean and Justin with your arms around them, and you looked back like you were getting taken to jail.
Yeah.
It was great.
Justin
great
had very little patience for that, which I don't blame him. It's very irritating.
He wasn't the kind, you know,
he was
motherly.
Very paternal and motherly. Yes. He was very parental, and Justin was very harsh.
Very harsh, cold.
But overall, fun party case.
Yeah. fantastic. Okay, right, my turn.
How was your week?
So I watched, you know, I'm trying to get back to my studies. I feel like I have my watch list and I like to go through them like in the order that I put them in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I watched Logan's Run, which has been on my list forever.
Oh,
I've never
I've always
seen
wanted
it.
To see that too.
I really enjoyed it. It's a little too long, but the visuals are great. It's like Barbarella, kind of that retro futuristic. I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun.
Cool.
But the movie I really loved this week is a little movie called Malignant. I adore this film.
Peanut needs to see it.
It is right up your alley. It's like a giallo film. It's like a love letter to 1980s weirdo horror movies in a way. It's like so over the top. It's great. It could almost be counted as a remake of a certain film, and I won't say which one. But we can discuss it afterwards, Patrick.
Okay. Like, you want me to kind of guess what I think you might have had on your mind?
No, I don't want you to guess.
Oh.
Well,
huh?
When you watch it, you'll know.
Right.
Oh, I just don't want to give it away. What?
You'll think I'll know when I watch it. Like, it'll be that clear. Mm-hmm. And so let's say I come back to you and I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Will you be surprised?
I won't be, but once I say what it is, you'll be like, oh my God, you're so right.
Okay, cool.
And we'll discuss that next week. So every one of you little fart heads out there, you watch Malignant and then you can join in on the fun conversation that Patrick and I are no doubt going to have next week, because I think you'll probably watch it this week, won't you, Patrick?
Probably. Yeah, probably.
Okay, you'll probably have a few more weeks than just next week to watch it, fart heads, so don't worry. But that's it, Patrick. No 5-star reviews this week, which is fine.
No sponsors, no 5-star reviews.
Does that hurt you?
The 5-star reviews are really fun.
They are fun.
Yeah. So it doesn't hurt me, but it's definitely demoralizing.
I think you're hurting a little.
No, I'm still a bit white hot.
No, you're still angry.
Yeah.
that's the emotion you're feeling. I understand that. Patrick, let's move on.
Yeah.
Let's get into this movie.
Yeah.
Fart. Okay, Patrick, this is Fart House. Like we said at the top, you and I watch the artsiest fartsiest films so that our listeners can pretend that they did. But something tells me that many won't have to pretend with this one, because I think a lot of people have seen this movie, and it is A Clockwork Orange. Are you doing music from the movie?
Yeah. Doesn't that sound like it?
Is that Beethoven's Ninth?
No, it's like it's like the theme that plays at the very beginning when they're in the milk bar.
Oh yeah, that's good. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I hear it now. Okay, so we'll discuss A Clockwork Orange and we'll subject it to our proprietary fartsy test, which determines how impenetrable this movie really is. But Patrick, I must ask, do you own this movie and have you seen it before?
Own it.
Got it.
Have seen it, and I got the Blu-ray out of my box to watch. So I watched the copy that I own. I also own the novel, but I have not read the novel, which is very embarrassing to admit.
You always say that. You say that as if I don't think that's embarrassing to admit.
Again, I was an English major. Not that it wasn't assigned.
You're not responsible for every book.
I know,
I
but
was
it's
a film major.
It's a lit classic. I own the novel, have not read it. I own the soundtrack on vinyl, have spun it.
Ooh.
So DJ I'm a clockhead. But you know, I'm a clockhead. I've only seen it one time prior to this.
Isn't that amazing?
When I was 16 or 17. And I got it on DVD from Netflix. Mm-hmm. And I watched it in my room. And I got home from school the next day. And my mom was very upset because...
How old were you?
Probably 16 or 17. So I was pretty old, but...
You could have seen it in theaters almost when it came out.
Yeah, but maybe I was 15. It's possible I was 15. But I think I was at least 16. And I guess while I was at school that day, my mom saw Clockwork Orange Netflix envelope in my room.
Yes.
And watched it.
Your mom watched it.
Yes. And she was not happy when I got home.
Wow.
Because of the film's content. And
she
thought
you were going to be a Drew.
Yeah. I needed the Ludovico method right after.
Yeah, you absolutely needed the Ludovico method.
So it was really, it was awful. It's funny now, but at the time I was, she
quite
seemed,
traumatized.
In my recollection, she was pretty mad and upset.
She was probably like, this movie upset me. My son is a derelict.
Yeah.
He's a pervert, frankly.
She's being reasonable, but I think we've had this discussion before about movies. I think I would be much more
lenient,
yeah, with my kids and movies.
Did you yell at your mom and say, "Stay out of my room"?
No, I think I just felt really awful and felt,
oh yeah,
I felt very much just in trouble, and I think I was very worried about what the repercussions would be. Like, was there going to be some sort of, was going to be more oversight on the kind of movies I was getting on Netflix?
What kind of day was your mom having? Just kind of strolls into your room, finds a movie and watches it?
I don't know.
How lighthearted.
I know. I think she had heard things about it and had finally watched it. There's also a story of my mom calling into the Howard Stern show in the early 90s because she had heard something that had upset her.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's, I don't know if she got onto the air, but she talked to someone at the radio station.
Do you think she talked to Baba Booey?
She may have talked to Baba Booey. So anyways, that's the Clockwork Orange Howard Stern show connection.
Was that the anecdote that you were teasing last week?
Yeah.
That was the anecdote, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was good, Patrick.
Good. Okay,
it was
cool.
90. It was more than 90% entertaining, which,
okay,
I think was our...
Good. Okay. But let me just say, I love my mom. She's the best mom ever. She's amazing.
Love
and
Maj.
She did nothing wrong. I probably should have been more responsible on my movie watching.
I miss her.
Yeah. We'll need to put something together. Well, you know, I'm coming back next week.
To San Diego?
Uh-huh.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Patrick. You going to make your way up to Los Angeles?
We'll see.
Man.
We'll take that offline. All right. Yeah. So have you seen it before?
Yes, I have. I think I saw it in college. I don't really remember, but I've seen it probably twice, maybe three times before this. But man, was it burned into my memory. I remembered every scene watching this again.
You know what's funny? I did too. And in watching it again, what was really, I remembered everything so clearly to the point that I was like, in my mind, before watching it, I was like, I don't remember it that well. I just remember these key scenes. And then I watched it and it's like, I did remember. I guess that's kind of all that happens. I mean, a lot happens, but also not a lot happens.
Yeah. Yeah, in some ways, I think this time I was kind of like, maybe the shine came off it a little bit on this viewing for me.
Mm-hmm.
But still good. Still good.
Still great movie.
Let's get into the synopsis here, Patrick. I'm going to need some help with some of the terms and stuff.
Oh, yeah. They're tough.
Also, just a content warning for this episode.
Yes, definite content warning.
There is depictions of rape, assault, and violence towards women, which is very shocking and horrible to watch in this movie. We will try to handle that as gently as possible. We won't really get into those scenes very much, I don't think, but or the sort of thought behind them, but it will be discussed, so just a heads up to everybody. Mm-hmm. So the synopsis, it's about this deviant teen named Alex, played by Malcolm McDowell, and he's got kind of a crew of homies named the Droogs. Is that their crew name?
I think Droogs is kind of like a, I don't know if it's actually their crew name. I think it's kind of like a slang word for like their compatriots, their friends.
Okay. Well, he's got a little crew and they all dress alike. They wear the little hats, black hats with like cricket white outfits with suspenders, and they look very goofy, and they kind of traipse around. It's,
and they
sort
have
of
these sort of like this massive jock strap thing that they sort of wear over their white pants.
Yes. And it's sort of a futuristic London, kind of, although there's nothing that really, there's no like futuristic technologies. It's just kind of a weird future type land, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it seems like a near term dystopian It's like kind of, we've talked about it before in like Brazil. What did you call it? Like a retro future kind of?
Yeah, retro futurism kind of in a way. Yeah, I could see that totally in this as well. And him and his homies, his droogs, they are violent, horrible sociopaths. And they go out every night and rob people, rape people, brutally beat up people. They have no regard for other humans whatsoever.
And they call it ultra-violence, a bit of the ultra-violence.
They call this kind of high of, like, committing crimes and perpetrating violence ultra-violence, a little ultra-violence.
A bit of the ultra-violence.
Oh, very good, Patrick. Anyways, things are getting a little dicey within the politics of the group. Alex, our main character, he likes to think of himself as the leader, but other characters like Dim and his buddy...
Georgie,
they're getting a little fed up with his ways. And so on one of the places they go rob, they set him up. And as the police are arriving, they hit him in the head with a milk jug. And he's momentarily blinded. And the cops come and pick him up and arrest him. And he accidentally had killed, or maybe not accidentally, but he did murder the woman he was robbing. And so he goes to prison. This is kind of the second part of the movie. Alex, he's stuck in prison and he's trying to get out and he signs up for this procedure. What is it called, Patrick? It's like an experimental procedure.
The Ludovico method.
What does it say it again?
The Ludovico method.
The Ludovico method, where they give him this drug and make him watch violence and it makes him sick while watching the violence.
It's like a sort of aversion therapy.
Aversion therapy, so that if he ever tries to commit violence, he'll get very ill. Anyways, he gets out of prison early, and he kind of tries to...
But do you remember an unfortunate side effect of the Ludovico method is Alexander DeLarge is a huge Beethoven fan. That's integral to his personality.
And they accidentally play it during one of the films, and they're like, "Not one of the side effects, too bad."
Yeah.
And it bothers him because he loves music, and now he can't listen to music without throwing up and getting all ill.
Yeah.
So anyways, he tries to return to normal life. His old buddies, Dim and Georgie, are police officers now. They beat him up, leave him for dead. Basically, all of the victims that he hurt before are getting back at him, and one of them... captures him and like tortures him by making him listen to Beethoven, and it makes him so ill he tries to kill himself. Well, now the government's in trouble and they're like, "We'll give you money and a job if you don't say anything bad about us in the press." And he's like, "All right then." And then also he's cured of the Ludovico method, and by at the end he's back to his old ways.
Yes.
Did this remind of you at all of like the insurrectionists and like Trump assholes?
Not while I was watching it. That didn't really cross my mind while I was watching it. What in particular did that...
I think the thing that reminded me of it was he didn't care about anybody. He cared not about another soul. I mean, he's raping women. He's murdering people. He's stealing. He's beating up homeless people. And then when he gets caught, he's like, "Please have mercy on me. Please, I'm the victim." He actually says, "I'm the victim." And it reminded me of when the insurrectionist, particularly the QAnon shaman, you remember him?
Mm-hmm,
he got caught. And when he was in jail, he was like, "Please take the food. Isn't very good. I can't eat this food. I have a very sensitive diet." It's like, oh, you're just mad you got caught, you baby.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. No, I could definitely see that. There's just a sort of a distaste for authority in all capacities, which I think, so that's the complexity of this film, is there's a distaste for authority, which I feel like everyone should be skeptical of authority and the government to an extent. But then it's like how you handle that and how you engage with the rest of society, with your relationship to government. And that's like the sort of the crux of this movie is like, at what point is the government going too far and at what point is the individual going too far? And how can both the individual and the government kind of coexist without the individual infringing on the rights of others and without the government infringing on the rights of the individual? And that's kind of like the central conflict of the film.
Well, here's what Kubrick said about it. And, you know, Kubrick was pretty forthright about the meaning of this movie, which a lot of directors aren't. Like, famously David Lynch, but this is what Kubrick said. He said it was a social satire dealing with the question of whether behavioral psychology and psychological conditioning are dangerous new weapons for a totalitarian government to use to impose vast control on its citizens and turn them into little more than robots. So I think, you know, Kubrick is saying like preventative discipline doesn't work. Like you do have to like just because you force somebody to do something doesn't mean they're going to change. And also there's a priest in this movie that's like, well, just because he's forced to not do evil things does not make him not evil. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's kind of a philosophical dilemma.
And it's funny too, because the government sees it as just an efficiency mechanism. If they're able to do this, then they can save money on prisons and all sorts of other, you know, criminal rehabilitation. It's like, that's all what it's about. It's just like, it's an opportunity for them to conceivably extinguish crime without having to address root causes of crime.
Can I just say, this was directed by Stanley Kubrick in 1971, as many of you know. A Clockwork Orange, while I was watching this, I was like, what the fuck does that mean? Basically, it's like a Cockney expression that means like organic on the outside, mechanical on the inside. So it's like a clockwork human being. I think orange is supposed to be like a human being, kind of. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. And I always loved the title. I don't remember like the exact time that I first heard Clockwork Orange, but I remember hearing about it and reading about it before I had seen the movie. And I was so fascinated by the title. It's just such an interesting, like in your mind's eye when you try and picture a Clockwork Orange, like what does that mean?
It's titillating. How do you conjure that? Very titillating.
Yes, very titillating.
How do you feel like you're supposed to feel about Alex? Like, because he is the main character, we're with him the whole time. He's the narrator. He's like the Ferris Bueller of this movie. How do you feel towards him while you're watching the movie, Patrick?
Well, I think Kubrick would probably say there's not a prescriptive way to look at Alex. But
what
I think,
a boring answer, Patrick. No. How do you feel about it?
No, I know. I'm gonna get to that. We've had this conversation before, and I'm trying to remember which.
We host a podcast together.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember which episode we talked about it with the sort of the notion of innate evil.
Funny Games, perhaps? That's what I was thinking.
It might have been Funny Games.
We need to talk about Kevin, perhaps?
Oh, that was it. It was We Need to Talk About Kevin. When we talked about this notion of innate evil.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that in the context of this movie, because what does society do with someone like Alexander DeLarge? Like,
he's like an unstoppable force of psychopathy, you know?
And so I just kind of was thinking to myself about how there are these intractable problems, or maybe not. Maybe that's small-minded of me to think that's an intractable problem, but it seems like an intractable problem. Sometimes society is faced with an intractable problem, which is sometimes there's an inherent psychopath living in society, and there's really no great way to deal with it. You can do something draconian, or you can do something cruel and unusual and ham-fisted, or you can try and approach it as if maybe they didn't have a good upbringing. They didn't have the resources they needed to succeed. They didn't have the medical treatment they needed mentally or physically to succeed. And you can try it from that approach. But then what if nothing comes of either approach? You know?
Well, I think there's something kind of scary about this too, because like him and his friends are psychopaths too, but they didn't get caught, you know? And they folded into society because they became police officers, which is kind of a scary commentary as well. But I think a lot of these psychopaths that are in society are able to be like, I know what I'm supposed to do. And in order to continue, I must become like the others in a way. I don't think they're consciously thinking that, but I think that's kind of what happens. They're like, oh, like they'll just fold into society and disappear. They're smart enough to not be true psychopaths,
right?
I guess.
Yeah, yeah. They get a sense of that there's a way that they need to. There's a baseline of which you need to operate within society, and you know, to not make too many waves. And they figure out how to kind of situate themselves accordingly.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to ask you a question.
Yes.
Did you ever have a little group of friends and you had a name for your little group? Because there's other like gangs in this, kind of like the movie The Warriors, you know, they all dress mm-hmm. the same. Did you ever have a little group of friends that y'all dressed the same and had a name for yourselves?
No, did you?
No.
I don't think...
I feel like some of my friends kind of tried to get that together in middle school, but no, we didn't. I never had anything.
I vaguely recall, I think, kind of having a club or like trying to come up with a club. I remember.
And you were the one that chastised me for starting clubs. Do you remember that in the Welcome to the Dollhouse episode?
Yes. You're a club starter.
Oh, that's not true. Well, I started this podcast, which is like the dorkiest, most horrible club a person could start. Patrick, this film, famously, directed by Stanley Kubrick. What's your opinion of Mr. Kubrick? Do you have a favorite of his movies?
Yes, The Shining is my favorite.
I'd say that's my favorite. I also like 2001 Space Odyssey. I think those are my two twin flames. And when did you come across, I mean, Stanley Kubrick is like one of those entry level art house provocative movie men. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the first Stanley Kubrick movie you ever saw?
It was The Shining. It was the first one that I ever
saw. Oh, it was?
Yeah. I'm trying to think, the second one was probably A Clockwork Orange, either that or Full Metal Jacket. And then Dr. Strangelove. There are only two Kubrick movies I haven't seen.
And what are those?
Fear and Desire, his first one.
Hmm.
And then I have not seen Spartacus, actually.
Oh, Spartacus doesn't really feel like a Stanley Kubrick movie. I think he came on that one later.
Yeah. Did you see the Kubrick exhibit at LACMA?
Oh, yes, I did. It was one of my parents.
Incredible museum exhibitions I've ever seen. Like everyone responsible for curating that just did an incredible, it was so amazing.
There was so much, there was like literally everything that Stanley Kubrick touched in that museum. Mm-hmm. I remember there was a letter in there about how to take care of his cats that he gave to like a cat sitter. And it was extremely, he was like prolific letter writer. And he respond, like if people wrote him a letter, he'd respond back. Very lengthy letter, like he'd be a great emailer now.
And he's a very meticulous archivist too. Do you remember seeing, there were also on exhibition was, so, you know, one of the last movies he had been working on or was working on and off throughout his career was Napoleon, was a movie about Napoleon.
Yeah.
And there's this enormous sort of library card style cabinet where he had all these like dozens of tiny drawers. And within all these tiny drawers were just like little note. I think it was a chronology of Napoleon's life by events. And it was a chronology of everything that had happened and journal entries and everything. And there was this whole massive thing. And he had been doing that all himself and archiving all that stuff. And
Patrick, I don't know if we have talked about this before. How do you think you'd do in prison? And what would you do? What would be your role in prison?
I think we've talked about it before, but maybe not. I mean, I wouldn't do well. It definitely wouldn't be an area in which I'd thrive. I'd struggle, man.
Would you join a gang to protect you?
No, I don't think so. I mean, like, let's say, what are the, am I a different, is it just me and I went to, like, what would I go to prison for? Like, let's say
it's like the fugitive situation.
Oh, I'm
where
framed?
You're kind of framed, yeah.
Shit. Oh my God.
The man with one arm.
I don't think I would ever commit suicide, but that would be, I mean.
Oh,
no. If you're framed, I mean, that would feel so hopeless. I don't know what I would do. I would have to just. Would I have access to my therapist still?
Sure.
Yeah. I think I'd be okay then, I guess.
He could sneak some treats and a condom up his butthole or something and give it to you.
Well, I don't think my therapist would come in to see me.
Well, you talk on the other side of the phone. Maybe you could call.
Yeah, I would.
Didn't you feel like his prison cell looked kind of nice, though? He had like his little desk in this movie.
He literally had a poster of Beethoven. He had some porno mags on the wall.
Yeah, his pictures and stuff. I mean, that was kind of fun. It looked like a dorm room. I don't know. It seemed kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, if I had my own room and not solitary confinement, or although maybe, no, I don't think it, even with all the other mean prisoners, you think you'd still want some socialization, so.
I think you'd make a lot of friends in prison, Patrick. You're such a friendly guy. You're making friends in Austin all the time. I don't see why that would change if you went to prison.
It's not making friends all the time. I made two friends.
You made some friends.
Yeah, and I don't even know if they are. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Anyways, that's getting very off track. But what about you? How would you be in prison?
I don't know. I like to think
you like routine. I think you'd do well.
I do like routine. Some part of sick part of me feels like I'd thrive in a weird way because mm-hmm. I like enclosed spaces. I like routine.
It's dense. You like density?
It's dense. I do like density. I think I'd read a lot.
I think you'd like the meals too. You kind of like these strange sort of hard-boiled egg and weird pickled things. You'd enjoy that.
Patrick, I know you're being mean and you're trying to hurt my feelings, but I think there is some truth to that. I do like hard-boiled eggs. I like coffee. I think I might kind of enjoy the food. You know, I don't think I'd care for the violence. I'd be scared. I'm very small and weak, and so I think that would be an issue, you know?
But you could wield your big brain.
Yeah, maybe what I did. Yeah, you, they could call me Brain. And then they're like, this guy's not that smart. He's kind of stupid, actually. Yeah, I go in, I'm like, call me the Brain. And they're like, ooh, he's smart. And then everyone's like, oh, he's kind of dumb. I thought he would have like ideas of how to make money in here. He's stupid. I think I'd take up smoking a lot just to pass the time. Maybe kill me sooner.
Yeah.
Take up letter writing, you know?
Would you have Trisha smuggle things in for you or no? Would you not want to put her in that position?
No. I would say, Trisha, find someone else.
You would tell her to find someone else. What if it was a 5-year stint?
5 years, I would say she better not find somebody else. But if this is a life sentence, I would say maybe that.
Okay. But 5-year stint, you'd want her to wait.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay.
She better wait. I should get this figured out beforehand.
Yeah, in case you should nail this down.
In case my podcast co-host frames me for some sort of murder.
Yeah, get it in writing.
Patrick, we got to move on to the fartsy test here. It's time.
All right, let's go.
Let's do it. This is the fartsy test. You know it. You love it. It's a beautiful test. The most beautiful you've ever seen. It's the test we use to determine the fartsiness of a movie, which is our scale that gauges how impenetrable, unapproachable, and generally artsy-fartsy a movie is. We continually add and subtract from this list. Patrick, is there any music in this movie?
There's quite a bit of music in this.
There is. It's a very central part of this movie.
It is, yeah. And it's, like I said, I have the soundtrack on vinyl.
Yes.
I mean, come on,
Patrick,
cool.
Do you ever listen to music, just like put on music and sit there and listen to it?
Rarely.
Or are you always doing something else?
I'm almost always doing something else. I wish I was better. I have done that before. Like for Sturgill Simpson's new album, I actually sat down or laid down and listened to his new album.
Oh, you laid down.
I laid
down. You vibed.
And I've done it on occasion and I do like it. And I wish I did it more, but I always feel like, you know, the irony is, it's like, I'm not doing anything that productive ever.
Yeah.
So it's weird that I'm like, oh, I have to be doing something while I'm listening to music. Otherwise it's lazy.
Yeah.
But it's not like I'm doing anything anyway.
But you don't feel that way when you're watching like a baseball game, you know, or do you?
No, you're right. I don't quite.
You just generally
that.
Feel bad all the time about whatever you're doing.
Yes, that is the best. I am always guilty and anxious about every action I take throughout the day.
Unfortunately, I share these attributes. Yeah. I wish I could roast you and say why
I regret
like that way.
Everything I do, I'm like, oh, I should have done that differently.
Yeah, everything I do, I'm like, didn't do that quite as right as I was supposed to. Even if I was like eating a piece of pizza, I was like, your form was off. You didn't do it right. You know?
I will think I should have eaten slower, or I think I should have done a different order. Like let's say I have a pizza that's half and half, you know, like two different styles.
Yeah.
I agonize over which one I want to be the last one. Or like if you're eating a meal that's really good, do you want your last bite of the meal to be the side or the main or something else?
Yeah. I'll get stressed out before eating because sometimes I'll be like, I don't know. Am I going to be able to, if I'm not entirely sure I'm going to be able to finish something, that really stresses me out. Mm-hmm. Like I get a big hamburger and fries plate and I'm like, what should I do? Should I commit to only eating half of this now so I can bring it home? Like there's a lot of stress with that, not just in food, but a lot of times at the end of every workday, I was like, could have done better on that one.
Yeah.
I don't know. You were not good today. You were very bad.
We need to be kinder to ourselves.
I know.
We're just doing the best we can out here, man.
We're sick. Is there suicide? Yes.
Attempted
suicide.
Yeah.
But suicide nonetheless. Now, Patrick, I have a question. I don't like to ask plot questions, but did the doctors reverse their, when he was under in the coma or whatever from attempting suicide, did they go in and fix his brain so that he didn't have what's the treatment again? The Laca?
The Ludovico method.
The Ludovico method? Did they undo the Ludovico method?
I don't know if they did anything like physiologically, like surgically, because, you know, he gets visited by that psychiatrist.
Yeah, but then he's like, I had the strangest dream that some surgeons were poking around inside my
brain.
Oh,
you're right.
And maybe she's like, oh, I don't know anything about that. And so I thought that was what she was referring to.
Oh, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Yeah, so maybe they did do something surgically. I don't know. That's unclear.
I like that scene where she's like, fill in the word bubble of what these people are saying. And he's like saying the dumbest stuff and laughing so much.
He's so proud of himself.
Cabbages, knickers, it's not got a beak.
Good.
He's like, did I get it right?
How many did I get right?
Oh, it's not that kind of a test.
And she's like, it's not that kind of test, Alex.
Very good. You're good at this, Patrick. You're good at
impressions. I love it. Remember his, who was that guy? He was like a social worker or case manager.
Oh, he's one of my favorites. Yes. I love the way he talks. His name is
Alex. Yes.
Deltoid.
Deltoid. Mr. Deltoid. Yes.
Ah, yes, Alex. What have we got here? You've messed it up again, haven't you?
Alec, boy, awake at last, yes? I met your mother on the way to work, yes? She gave me the key.
I would be quite frightened. Like, Alec just finds him sitting, this like guidance counselor sitting on his parents' bed in the morning. That would have frightened me.
Yeah, for a second, I thought it was like his mom's lover. Like, maybe it was like a man that was having an affair. Maybe that was going on. I don't know. But that's like, because Alex was like, what the fuck are you doing here, dude?
Yeah. Hello, Alex.
Yeah.
Quite a disappointment. Yes. I can't even do it because the timbre of his voice is so powerful. I'll drop something.
Yeah, you got to drop it. I love a drop.
I will. I know you love a drop. does someone masturbate? Is there a penis in this movie? Yes, penis. Does he masturbate? There was, now, on the view, this viewing, I felt like there could have been. Can I tell you where?
Yeah, let me, yeah, tell me and I'll see if that's what I have in my mind.
At the end of the night of his first night of ultraviolence, he goes back to the house and he's like, time to make this night perfect. And he puts on Ludwig van Beethoven.
Like
he's jerking off to it.
Oh, it was gorgeousness and gorgeousity made flesh. It was like a bird of rarest spun heaven metal, or like silvery wine flowing in a spaceship. Gravity all nonsense now. As I slush it, I knew such lovely pictures.
Yes, that was my impression too. Especially because
okay,
it's...
okay, so yes.
Yeah. Especially because it's cutting between all of these dark images and...
yes.
Violence and...
He says something like, it's time for a good wank or something at the end of the night or something like that.
Yeah, and you see him in bed. I can't remember if you see the sort of manual motion.
His face is kind of messed up as if he was jerking off, so... I'm going to say that's a yes. We're going to put that down as a yes for that one. Are there topics, images, or behaviors that go beyond what would be considered acceptable in a mainstream film? 100%.
Yeah. Can you believe this was fucking made by Warner Brothers?
I know. It's actually shocking. Like, the violence towards women in this movie is very upsetting.
It's very awful. It's the worst. It's like some of the most graphic and upsetting violence against women that comes to mind in a movie. It's awful.
Yeah. I like... to the point where I was like legitimately worried about the actress in a lot of those scenes. I mean,
and
a lot of
irritated
the actors,
with Stanley Kubrick. Like, what do you do? Like this? It needs to be like this. Like,
yeah. You do wonder. You're like, why did you need to have these images? Was it totally necessary to get your point across? Because it, at the end of the day, it's not really about that. You know, like he could have just like, it could have been not as bad.
Right.
And I think it's
still
gotten the point
maybe
across.
Maybe one scene, but there's multiple scenes. It's like,
well, and also like I said, I was worried about the actresses in those scenes, but famously Malcolm McDowell got very hurt making this movie.
I actually didn't know that. What happened?
So his cornea got scratched in that scene where the doctor puts the claps.
Holy
so he
shit.
Got his cornea scratched and was like partially blinded for a while. And then there's the scene where his head is getting dunked in the water. You remember that in the, like the two cops are dunking his head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was supposed to have a breathing tube down there and it came out of his mouth during one of the takes. And so he was basically getting drowned and he had to go to the hospital and he had McDowell cracked some ribs, on that humiliation stage scene, you know, where he's getting humiliated at the end by that guy who's like beating him up.
Yes, yes.
So he did that, and then he like almost drowned when he was being.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So Kubrick has a bad, and I mean, Kubrick was downright abusive to
Shelley Duvall
on The Shining, and who knows how many others. So, is it worth it for the art? I don't think so. But that is the way he went about his
MO, I guess.
Can Peanut start watching this movie after 8 p.m. without falling asleep?
Yes.
It's quite kinetic.
It
We're
is.
Like, boom, back.
And the music is huge in that regard. Like, it's a wall of yeah. sound sort of movie.
Oh, this is what I was going to ask you, Patrick. I got sidetracked.
Mm.
I was just thinking about this while I was watching Clockwork Orange, and this is not related to this film whatsoever.
Okay.
What's your relationship to commentary tracks?
Very good question. Love
Thank
this
you.
Question. I always would like to think that I wish I was more into commentaries, but for whatever reason, I'm not. But the one that I remember, and I think maybe it's because the first one that I remember listening to, it was probably, I haven't listened to very many. And I think because I thought it was not that good or interesting, is I watched Cameron Crowe's commentary of Almost Famous Bootleg Cut. And Cameron Crowe, I met once when we were working on We Bought a Zoo when I was at eFilm.
Oh, did you have to let him out of the garage?
No, no. Okay. We were actually at the Fox lot. Okay. I remember we got Subway for him.
Nice.
Really nice guy, but his commentary wasn't very good. And he had his mom on too, you know, because his mom is kind of famously a character in Almost Famous, played by Frances
sure.
McDormand. And so she's kind of a character just in the sense of the colloquial sense of she's just an eccentric person.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it was kind of tedious and not that interesting. I'm not that revelatory. And so I haven't been much of a commentary. I kind of would like to be, but then also again, it goes back to, it seems like a waste of time to watch a movie that you've already seen with a commentary. But
yes.
That, but that argument
so much
doesn't
time.
Hold water. Yeah, it's a lot of time.
Jesus. I when I was in film school, I was like, well, I got to watch every commentary track. If it's got a commentary, I must watch it. And
that's
it,
cool,
so
though. Did you watch a lot?
I watched a fair amount, but most of them are tedious. There are some good ones, and I think I learned some stuff, but I have no desire to ever watch a commentary track ever again. The only one I would be interested in is maybe if I own it. Maybe that'll be my rule. If I own it and there's a commentary track, I'll watch it if I'm interested. Like, I would be interested in a David Lynch commentary track on Blue Velvet, but I don't think there is one. But
yeah. I don't think he's never done a commentary, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't know. Hard to say. I felt like a moral object or a moral need,
compulsion
to watch the commentary tracks, but I'll give you a really good one. You only need to watch one, Patrick.
Okay.
Commentary track of John Hughes for the Ferris Bueller's Day Off DVD.
It's that good.
It's amazing. It's like How to Make a Movie.
Cool.
It's really good.
I do.
And
I'm sure there's probably a Letterboxd list that's like best commentary tracks.
I liked Francis Ford Coppola's for The Conversation. I remember that being really
memorable. You told
me
about that one, yeah.
Is there an inordinate amount of milling about in this movie, so much so that it could be retitled the 2013 comedy We're the Millers? I would actually say no.
I would say marginally. I mean, there's some droog milling, but they're
yeah,
usually
being... Yeah, but it's all feels very intentional. It
yeah,
doesn't feel like...
And they're always
going?
On their way to do some ultra-violence.
Very bad things.
Yeah,
very ultra-violent bad things.
Yes.
Are you ever worried that if you have a child, they're going to turn out like an Alex, what is his name, DeLarge?
Alex DeLarge. Yeah, I worry about that. And we
like
talked about
Kevin.
This, we need to talk about Kevin. I mean,
yeah.
What can you do?
Scary.
It's scary.
What can you do?
I don't know. Set him outside on the curb until someone else picks him up. I don't know.
It's hard to say. Poster titillation level. Ooh, it's through the roof
high,
for me.
High.
There's the image, that image of Malcolm McDowell with that weird like eyeliner,
yeah,
like fake eyelash thing.
I think this is some of the best costume and set design of the 70s.
Wow,
wouldn't you say? I mean, it's all iconic. It's like
endured iconic.
For decades, and people who haven't even seen the movie will probably recognize the costumes and the poster.
Yeah,
and some
absolutely.
Set design.
Those that the costumes of
the Drakes.
The Alex and his drugs.
Alex and his drugs.
It's very much one of those movies where you're like, what the fuck is that movie? I must watch it. Because it is, it sort of defies convention. And I mean, this is in some ways like Stanley Kubrick's second comedy after Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Patrick, we've kind of touched upon a lot of pretentious things with this movie. I don't know if I can even salvage one more.
Me neither.
To give to... Okay, we're done. We're empty. What more do you want from us, listener?
I don't know.
This is our blood. Is that what you want? You want us to bleed for this podcast?
I'm sure some of us want some of our blood, man. We got some nice blood.
Okay. Calm down. Patrick,
yeah.
Do you have a score for this movie?
I do.
Let me tabulate mine.
Okay.
I got it.
All right. Do you want to go first or want me to go first?
I'm going to go first.
Okay.
9.
Wow. Maybe I should
have gone
higher.
This is an out there movie, man.
I said 7.9.
Should we say 8.5?
Yeah, let's do 8.5.
Okay, 8.5. Yeah, I mean...
It is extremely out there, but I guess it's extremely out there, but it... I feel like even the person that would be really... And I think a 9 is a reasonable score, but for my perspective, I think even if someone were to watch it, if they could somehow get past just how fucked up it is, it moves along at a... I don't know if entertaining is the right word, but it's compelling.
Would you give 2001 A Space Odyssey a higher fartsy?
Wow. Absolutely. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, I guess I would have to, wouldn't I?
Yeah.
That is some bonkers stuff. There's the narrative structure of that is very odd. But he made this. It's interesting that he made this after 2001 because this is in some ways a more conventional film.
Mm-hmm.
Narrative wise, but.
Yeah. And then what was Barry Lyndon after Clockwork Orange?
I believe so.
He had such a fascinating career.
Yeah, he did. People love Barry Lyndon. I'm a little cooler on Barry Lyndon.
I think I expected to be bored to tears watching Barry Lyndon, so that when I finally watched it and was like, oh, this is pretty good.
I expected, like, I think it was one of the last ones I'd seen of Stanley Kubrick, and I was like, oh, here we go, right into my veins. I love this. And I was just, and I was bored to tears. I wept.
I expected to be like, checking my phone every 5 seconds. And so the fact that it kind of was engrossing was surprising to me.
Patrick, you need to put your phone in a little box with a lock on it that doesn't open until after the movie's over.
I know. Well, I've gotten better doing that. I think we're both pretty good about that when we watch movies for this. But also I take notes on my phone, so.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. I do them on a little pad.
I do it on the
pad. I'm trying to make my life more analog these days.
I appreciate that. But with the pad, too, I typically like to watch movies in the dark, and it's hard to write with pen and paper in the dark. God,
why is life so hard?
I don't know. It's fucking hard, dude. So much shit being thrown at us all the time. So fraught.
Oh, God. Patrick, do you have a drink pairing? Can I guess?
Yeah, guess it.
Big glass of milk.
Sure is, brother. What do they call their milk in it? They call it, is it hard milk?
I thought it was milk plus or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's milk plus.
Now, Patrick, you famously shamed me for drinking milk in the past.
Yeah, it's gross.
I love milk.
Would you, I wonder what, I was having this discussion, with Manuel and I met Manuel's friend Elliot. And cool. I can't remember how we were discussing this. Oh, because we were discussing... I can't remember how we got, but basically, did you see this tweet? There was this tweet from this woman who, she tweeted that she went on a Tinder date or a Bumble date with someone, and he had 3 glasses of Coke at dinner, and that turned her off, and she ghosted him because he had 3 glasses of Coke at dinner.
Uh-huh.
And in the comments, a lot of people were like, I mean, it's a very divisive replies to that, as you can imagine. And I hated that take because soda's delicious, number one.
Uh-huh.
And number two, what if you're trying not to drink and that's your mechanism for trying not to drink?
What if he's nervous?
Yeah, there's a million. So I found that tweet really upsetting. But a lot of other
people. So you're saying if I had drank 3 glasses of milk at a date. But that would be cool, right?
No, that would not. That is where we all decided. That's where we would draw the line. Is if someone was drinking.
See. Oh, the internet decided.
Me, Elliot, and Manuel, because we started talking about that. That tweet.
Well, when you and I worked at Intelligentsia, we used to make our coffee with whole milk. And I would get so hungry and I didn't have any food there, I'd drink a whole big glass of milk and that would help with the hunger.
Gross.
Ooh. Shut up. Why are you so mean?
I'm not mean. You're
in the central time zone and you're not drinking milk? Get out.
We don't do milk in Texas, man. What do you, armadillo juice?
Leprosy-filled armadillo juice. I love milk. It's still tasty. My cousins would drink milk with pizza, which I found very disgusting. Ugh. That dairy on dairy. It's just too much dairy.
I feel like that happens in E.T., though. Don't they have milk and pizza
maybe
in E.T.?
Maybe it does. You know what my favorite line in E.T. is?
Shut up, penis breath.
There's nothing like that, penis breath, Elliot.
Yep.
Yeah, it's great.
It wasn't like that, penis breath. I was delighted by that line when I was a kid.
So
Elliot.
Funny.
Elliot. Elliot. Elliot.
I love E.T.
E.T.'s great.
I think it's Steven Spielberg's best film.
I would agree, I think. Yeah, I think I'd agree.
What would you say, Ready Player One? Get out of here, Patrick.
For a second, I was going to say Saving Private Ryan, but I think that's a little... It's a little overly sentimental.
I like Saving Private Ryan, but when you think about a filmmaker's like best film, you want something that only that filmmaker could make.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, and that's E.T.
And that is E.T., I feel like. Mm-hmm. Like no other filmmaker.
Oh,
that is
Jaws, too.
Jaws is great, and I feel like there's a... I also think Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park might be my favorite Steven Spielberg movie.
Yeah.
I love
it. I love to hate on Spielberg, but he's just made these iconic, just these films that you just can't.
Well, I mean, it's easy to hate on him, but like, what filmmaker who's made like 50 movies doesn't have clunkers? Yeah. You know what I mean? Or like falls back on the things he likes to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyways, where are we? Drink pairing, milk, yum, yum, yum. Would you do milk plus?
Yeah, let's do milk plus.
Now, is it whole milk, vitamin D? 2%, 1%, or skim?
I would do 2% because I'm a little baby. Not skim.
Skim is 2%. Gross. Yes. Skim tastes like water-flavored milk or milk-flavored water. It's disgusting.
The mouthfeel is really gross. And the milk mouthfeel is already really gross. And so then with skim, it's just like, ugh.
I'm not going to litigate this here. You hate anything that came off a farm.
That's not true. I love apples.
You hate beef.
I love beef.
Apples?
Yeah. Apple comes
off orchards. I wouldn't say apples come from... That's not a farm. I'm sorry. This accusation was so ridiculous that I can't even sustain it. I've seen you eat pork and cow.
Yeah. You know I love beef. It's what's for dinner.
You know that I love beef. God almighty. Okay, Patrick... This is our show, Fart House. It is ending right now. If you want to follow us on Twitter, Fart House Pod, Instagram, Fart House Pod. If you want to follow Patrick on Twitter, you can see him get angry about the person drinking Coca-Cola, something like that.
I didn't get angry. I stayed silent in the discussion.
Okay. You stayed silent, just eating popcorn, watching anxiously to see what other people
were. Yes, exactly.
If you want to follow him on Letterboxd, at PR Mallon, follow me on Letterboxd or Instagram or Twitter. I'm at Casey Lee O'Brien on everything. Keep an eye out for the Patreon. We're going to maybe announce it next week, right, Patrick?
Yes, next week it will be announced. That is a solemn promise.
Fantastic. Okay, leave us a 5-star review. Really helps the show. Patrick, we did it again. Oh, boy.
Goddamn, we're special.
We are special, Patrick.
We're special.
What are you
going
to do with the rest of your night? You're going to go see your brother and your sister-in-law?
Yeah, going to go try see Tom and Morgan if they're still out and about. It's 8:40 here, and 8:40 p.m. Yeah. Central Time on a Tuesday. So the ship may have sailed. I'm going to be desperately trying to reach them to see if they have any bandwidth.
Please, come out. When you were a student in like middle school and high school, did you... like to hang out with friends after school?
That's a really
Did you like
good question.
To do social things on school nights?
No, I was talking about this with someone else the other day. I was much more, it's kind of distressing. I was much more comfortable being a loner in high school and college than I am now. Mm. And I don't know if that's because I was married and got used to being around someone.
Yeah.
And so now not having that makes me want to be more social. I don't know. But I was I would say in high school, I was much more loner oriented. I had friends, but I wasn't like needed to see them after school right away. It was more a weekends thing. I remember we would go to Taco Bell. We go to Taco Bell a lot. Yeah, I don't know. What about you?
I hated seeing friends after school. I wanted to be home away from them.
And yeah, I don't think I hated it, but I think I did prefer to be home. I felt much more homebody-ish. And I remember, too, my first quarter in college, it was like the most comfortable I ever felt being alone. And I feel like I'm chasing that ever since then.
Chasing that high.
Yeah, because
maybe I could teach you something.
Yeah, I guess. I'm just now so desperate for companionship, I'll just latch on anyone.
Thing.
Yeah, or anything.
All right, Patrick. Well, on this very gray and sour note, let's say goodbye. This is the Cinephile Cuties signing off.
All right.
Patas. Patas. Patas.